All right, I've got a confession to make. Every year, before the start of spring training, I've always kind of done this back when there were newspapers and I was a newspaper writer, is to sit down and make up a list of things that I hoped I would never have to talk about each season. It could have been particular controversy from the year before, or particular player, or just game, situation. I'm so ready to move on, and I have moved on mentally and emotionally from Barrios coming out of the game, the playoff game, and I moved on from Shohei Ohtani about 2 seconds after it became apparent he wasn't going to come here. And I like to think that as I've gotten older, the stuff that bothered me doesn't bother me as much. I got to bring Kevin Barker in here. Kevin Barker, of course, our Florida correspondent. I never thought, I thought we had buried the home run jacket last year. I thought we had kicked dirt on it. I thought we'd put the stone in front of it. Here lieth the home run jacket. And then a certain reporter, I'm not going to say who it is, but then a certain reporter sits down with Vladdy Jr., Kevin, and Vladdy says to her, yeah, I kind of like the home run jacket to come back. And it's personal. And you know what? If no one else wants to wear it, I'm kind of okay with that. Now, I swear to God, I promise we're not going to spend the entire show talking about the home run jacket. But, Kevin, we did talk about it. And I think we were one of the few shows that wasn't afraid to say that the home run jacket, for whatever reason, it became an issue. There were a lot of guys in the clubhouse that didn't like it. There were a lot of guys that didn't like the way it was. They didn't like the manager, Charlie Montoya, at that time, getting involved in it. Teams have always done dumbass things or different things. And this, I don't know, I kind of thought the home run jacket was, I just didn't care, other than the fact it seemed that a lot of other people cared about it. And generally, when you do something that makes people feel strongly one way or another about it, it gets to be a bit of a pain in the ass. So explain this to me, because I got to think there are guys in there that are right now are just shaking their head and going, really?
Why would you think they're shaking their head? I don't understand why this is really even a story. Like, this is one person thinking that it helps him have more fun. If that's wearing a jacket after he hits a homer, I hope he wears it 55 times this year. Like, it's going to make it way easier for me and you to talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I just don't understand why it's a thing. I don't think it is a thing. I think there is certain people in the room that feel very strongly one way about not wearing the jacket, but Vladdy's made it perfectly clear that if the jacket's coming back, the jacket's for him. And if you want to be a part of the jacket, then more power to you. Come on, we're the more the merrier. But he ain't standing up in the room and saying, this is a must, we have to do this. He just wants to have fun, and he thinks the way he can have that is to wear a jacket. So, again, who are we to think any other way than, I think this stems from, last year when a couple of guys that were traded that meant a lot to Vladdy, and then on top of it, it was a team thing or a couple of individual thing that they thought they needed to eliminate the jacket. And, he being so Vladdy, basically,
you think Vladdy, let's face it, Vladdy was pissed off about it last year. You trade his buddies. First of all, you're the guy who got to carry us to the promised land. You're part of the core. Yeah. You're a big part of the core, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. And then, boom, Teoscar's gone. Lourdes Gurriel Jr.'s gone. And, business is business. He's not the first guy to see his best friends traded off a team. But then you kind of have the home run jacket. It's almost like here's the way I look at it. If you were Vladdy, and Vladdy likes to have fun. And if you were Vladdy, it's like, you have taken away the things that helped me have fun in the game. I'm not saying that created, controversy with Vladdy or anything, but I don't know. And then to flip it on the other side, Kevin Barker, the player, when you played, if there was a guy in the clubhouse that got up and said, guys, you know what? when I hit a home run, I'm going to drop my pants at second base and run around. You guys don't have to do it. You guys don't have to do any of that, but I'm going to do it because I'm going to have fun with it. I bet Kevin Barker, the player, would have looked at that guy and gone, really? Like,
yeah, not really. It would depend on who the player was. If it was Kevin Barker standing up saying, I'm going to drop my pants, Kevin Barker wouldn't have been in the big leagues a long time. If Vladdy wants to drop his pants after hitting a double, more power to you, as long as you're hitting 55 or 60.
As long as he doesn't get picked off base, pulling him back up, right?
It's baseball is just like life. It's a pecking order. Like, if you're one of the elite players in baseball and, you know, you have your own opinion about Vladdy, whether you think he's elite or not, but we expect him to be elite. And if this is the final period to that he thinks he needs to have a little bit of a goal to, you know, the sort of the treasure at the end of the rainbow, that if I hit a home run, I get to wear whatever I want to wear. Who are we? Like, who cares?
Okay,
like,
but Kevin,
I don't care if he wears it or not. I hope I see it 55 times.
Here's the thing, though. And again, I'm playing devil's advocate here because you know me well enough. I don't really care. You do what you want when you hit a home run. I just don't. And I don't think you need to have fun policing every team. But here's the thing about Vladdy. You can understand where people would want to read into this. Coming off a year that was not what we expected from Vladdy. A lot of guys would take that year to the bank, but it's not what we expected from Vladdy. Went to arbitration with the team over pocket change, stuff that you and I could probably find around here in the cushions.
Really? Yeah, what cushion are you looking at?
Well, anyhow, but you get my point here. No extension, like no long-term extension. As far as we can tell, they've never come close to that. People are going to look at this, and then we talked about his buddies being traded and yada. People are going to look at this and go, this is a further indication that somehow there is, if not necessarily a feeling that Vladdy is being isolated, it's just an indication that things aren't as smooth between Vladdy and the rest of the team/organization. You can understand from a distance. People are going to look at that. Trust me, they are. People are going to look at that and say that's the case.
Yeah, once again, this is probably why I should make more money than you on this show, is because you're circling the wagons again. The only reason this is a story is because the other half of the core doesn't like it. Like that.
Well, that's a story then, Kevin. That's a story. If half the team thinks it's dumb and doesn't like it, that's a story.
I said the other half of the core. I didn't say the other half of the core. Of the team.
Okay, that's even worse.
There's two people in the core. Okay, there's the dude that plays short and the dude that plays first. The dude that's short don't like it. The dude at first wants to use it because he thinks it takes him to, I guess, a whole level that, you know, he's trying to get to be the best Vladdy that he can possibly be. And that's the only story here. And other than that, who cares? Like, I look, again, it gets back to that you're a grown man, I'm a grown man. If you want to wear a jacket after you hit a homer, I hope you do it 55 times. And, you know, after the 30th one, I'll help you put it on. Because that would mean that we're winning a bunch of baseball games and we're probably going to go where we want to go. I'm all for that. Again, it's to each his own thing, right? Again, this gets back to that where, you know, you can't just sort of be everybody in a room. That's why baseball is very individual. It really is. I know it's a team sport, and at the end you're looking at teams finishing, and the number beside the team is where you're ultimately going to end up, but it's the individuals getting you there. And if that individual thinks that he needs a jacket or whatever to sort of put a period on the end of having fun, why would we make a big deal of this?
Because it is going to be talked about the first time Bo hits a home run and doesn't put the jacket on, and Vladdy comes up and hits the home run and puts the jacket. It just is. And that would be, it's the same in any market. Be the same thing. You don't think it'd be a big deal in New York right now?
Yeah, I don't.
If Aaron Judge said, you know what, if I hit home runs, I'm going to put a jacket on. You don't think that's going to be a big deal in New York? It'd be a big deal everywhere.
Yeah, neither one of them guys are Aaron Judge. Like, let's be honest. Like, let's not sugarcoat it and say it any other way. Like, it's, again, if you don't want to wear the jacket, don't wear the jacket.
Yeah, I think you're underplaying it. That's just me.
Well, okay.
I mean, then, I think you're right. No, I think you're right. I agree with you, but what I'm saying is I don't think people are going to take it that way. And I don't know if that's a good thing. I just don't. Why create a distraction?
I think Vladdy is to the point where I don't think he cares what people think. I think he is about getting a deal. I think he is about trying to have as much fun as possible. I mean, it's no disrespect. It's just the way he feels like this will get him to being the best Vladdy he can possibly be. And again, this is what we've been yelling and screaming about the last couple of years. We want to see the best out of Vladdy. And if this helps, if I'm Bo, if I'm anybody else that doesn't want to wear the jacket that plays every single day, why would you even think about wearing the jacket? Do your thing, walk back, shake hands, live to fight another at bat. And I'm an individual person. You do what you want. Whatever makes you best, go for it, big man.
If they suck, it's going to be an issue. Just telling you right now. It's going to be pointed out as an issue.
Well, you just went to the opposite ends of the spectrum in a matter of seconds by saying if Bo doesn't wear it after hitting the
home run. No, I'm not.
And then if they suck, one of the two's getting traded probably. You won't have to worry about it.
That's actually a valid point.
I know how you are because I've been around you a very long time, so I understand that you're trying to throw fuel on both ends.
I'm making a point, and you know how I feel about this. You know how I feel about the jacket. I don't care. You can do what you want. I didn't like the manager getting involved in it. I think that looks kind of...
Yeah, that was dumb.
That looked basically dumb. Like a guy who didn't belong in the major leagues getting involved in it. That's all I don't like about it. I mean, I don't care.
That's probably one of the reasons why the manager is no longer here.
Exactly. The Jays are in Minnesota. Boy, this looks like the place to be if you're just dying to find out who the 26th man is on the roster. The Jays are playing the Twins this afternoon. Espinal, Vogelbach, Clement, Schneider, Lucas, Escobar, Horwitz, Servin, Roden, Bowden, Francis on the mound. You know, we've talked about Espinal, Vogelbach, Clement, Schneider. I mean, Lucas is still here. Somebody in the organization really likes him because he's been here for a couple of years.
Getting a lot of hits.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying there's a reason he's here. You know, Escobar, Horwitz kind of figures in there as well. We know that Joey Votto is expected to play. At least if I'm reading this right, he's expected to play in another minor league game today. And then if all things go according to plan, Joey Votto will be in the lineup for one of the split squad games they play on Sunday. Don't want to read anything into one guy's outing in the minor leagues, but what were people saying about Joey Votto after yesterday?
Well, I was here. I saw it up close and personal.
Okay.
He looked, I think, exactly like if you close your eyes, he's supposed to look like he was facing a lefty. I saw the first two at bats. He saw the lefty. The first at bat, he lined out the second. Like, he took a close pitch. He got a good pitch to hit. He hit it hard. And it was up the middle. Like, it was, you know, he didn't pull it down the right field line. He wasn't out and around. He wasn't off balanced. You know, it was a short little compact swing. Got to his finish. Hit it hard. He barreled it up. You know, that's sort of, I think, what you expect from seeing from Joey Votto. I just wonder what the expectations are and how quickly he's supposed to get to those. That's the thing is, I don't know if they know, and I don't know if Joey knows. This is a day-to-day thing. This is why I think Vogelbach's already on the team because of that reason. Not saying, like you said yesterday, you know, you could probably see Joey at the home opener, but that's, what is that? That's 10 games in.
Yeah,
that's a pretty big sample size for him to go to the minor leagues wherever he's at. I'm assuming it would be here. It's warmer. You know, he can do things here. He could lead off six or seven times if he wanted to, which you couldn't really do if you went to Buffalo. It just would make more sense if he stays here and does it from here. And, you know, he can ultimately end up the way, however that is, Joey wants to end up. Again, Joey's driving this bus. Yeah, Joey will tell John however he wants to be, you know, determined when it comes to just when he's coming up, if he's coming up, how long it takes him to be called up, how many at bats he needs, those kind of things. He looked good at first too. I saw him at first. He, you know, he was fleet of foot. The very first hitter hit a ball down the right field line and he had to dive for it. He looked good. He dove for it. He got up. He, you know, went back and covered his bag. He went to the right bag. He did all those things that a veteran guy was supposed to do that will be exactly what I think the Blue Jays are expecting him to be if he makes the big league squad sometime this year.
Yeah, and you know, for people who don't, people who may not have been to spring training or aren't aware, you can. Well, I use this example. Kevin, I don't know if you were doing the show then. But there was a plan in spring training to get Kevin Pillar to bunt more. This was something the Jays were working on. So they sent Kevin Pillar over to the Yankees complex with minor leaguers, and he hit in every game. Like, he would go up to the plate in the first game, drop a bunt, run to first, he's out. Pick up his bat, go over to the next game in the on-deck circle. Whoever, you know, drop a bunt. Oh, got on base. Pinch runner comes in for him. Picks up his bat, goes. And you can do that. You can do that in the minor leagues. You can literally, if you want, you get 20 at-bats in one day if you want.
I'm not sure he's running all over the place. You got to remember, he's a future Hall of Famer. Like, you got to sometimes act like a future Hall of Famer. I do think he could lead off every inning. Say he wanted to DH instead of playing first.
Sure, absolutely.
He could lead off every inning. Yesterday he played first. He didn't do that. It was, you know, you're hitting when your turn comes around, because you're playing defense and you sort of don't want to disrupt everybody else. Joey Votto is, you know, he has field awareness. He understands what's going on. It's just not always about him. Where he's at, there's other guys on the field that need to get their work in too, and you don't want to disrupt that. And again, I think it was, all things considered, yesterday was a step in the right direction. And I'm sure he woke up today, he's probably a little sore. Everybody does, you know, the older you get, the sorer you get. But it seems like he was good. He's jumping around in the infield. You know, his pre-pitch setup was good. It's just exactly the way I remember it when I played with him. Like, he was ready to field his position, and when he hit a line drive, it was looking the way it was supposed to look. It was straight. I was right behind home plate. It was straight. It didn't have any out and around to it. Like, it didn't have a hump back in it where he was on top of it, and he squared it up. It went where it was supposed to go. You know, the outcome wasn't there, but I don't think that's what he's looking for. So all things considered, I think he can take some positive away from that and move on.
The Jays beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 10-3 yesterday. Chris Bassitt. Oh, it is the Pirates, mind you. Chris Bassitt, 9 strikeouts. In that game, it was an opening day lineup, a lineup very much as we expect to see an opening day. We've spent a lot of time talking about George Springer. We talked about it when we first started coming on air again for the baseball season. I think we're both on the same page here. For whatever reason, George Springer has escaped a lot of scrutiny in this city. You hammer Vladdy.
But for
a lot of folks in this city, you know, you hammer Vladdy, you hammer Chapman. We hammered all these guys. Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk needed to be better. But for some reason, people were reluctant to say George Springer needs to be better. And I've said this. I think George Springer has to have, you know, Vladdy and Bo are important. But a really good year out of George Springer, to me, is of utmost importance. Now that you've been down there, what are you seeing from him this spring? What are you hearing about those plans to, I guess, pull the ball more? Is that, you said it's obvious he's making an attempt to do that, right?
Yeah, sometimes you get a little older. What do you have to do? You have to cheat a little bit more. That's what I see, even on his takes. You watch him when he takes a pitch on TV. If you're a fan of the Blue Jays and you watch the Blue Jays on TV, watch his takes. It looks like he's trying to aggressively get the foot down and get the barrel out front instead of, you know, just letting everything fall into place. And because he's on time, everything else will take care of itself and it'll go where it wants to go. You get older, it just doesn't work that way. You got to think mindset wise. I got to really, because of where I'm standing and what I'm trying to do and where I'm at my best, I got to sometimes think about my plate, where it's at. I talk about that all the time, that imaginary plate. If you're going to think that imaginary plate out front, that means your barrel has to be more out front, more consistent, because I can drive the ball. He ain't a guy that can go right center a lot, you know, and especially at the Rogers Center. He was one of them dudes last year that was complaining about the ball not traveling at the Rogers Center. And now when you're thinking that way, you tend to pull more balls and, you know, think about hitting away from the shift. You know, you may jam yourself on a ball in on the ground because you don't think you can hit a homer in the air because of the park. They don't want that. They want him to hit the ball in the air to the pull side, let it fall where it may, because he has tons of talent. And I think you can see that. Look, the 20-70 thing, he can't do that. I mean, I'm a guy that thinks you get paid a lot of money, you got to live up to that. The first couple of years, he hasn't lived up to it. I mean, let's say it like it is, he hasn't. He needs to do better. He needs to be better. He needs to hit more home runs. And they are really putting an emphasis on him every single day to do that. Hopefully he can do that. And again, you know, when he's leading off for a reason. To do those kind of things, to get the head out to the pool side, hit the ball in the air, and hopefully hit some homers. So they're counting on it, and they need it, I think.
Now, we know that Alek Manoah, speaking to Ben Nicholson-Smith, Manoah, you know, making it pretty clear that, I mean, he's not at the point yet where they're talking about putting him on a mound. I mean, he's still, according to Ben, he's been receiving daily treatment, continuing to throw off the ground. You know, he's doing his recovery work behind the scenes. He's clearly not going to be ready to break camp with the team.
Nope.
Bowden Francis gets a start today. I wanted to ask you this. If you're Bowden Francis, is there a point in spring training where your focus goes from I got to make the team to I'm on the team, now I got to work on stuff? Is it, you know what I'm saying? In other words, if you're Bowden Francis now with each of, I mean, he can taste opening day. You know he can taste opening day. Mm-hmm. Does he approach a start differently now because of that, as opposed to the first or second start in spring where, quote unquote, you're fighting for a spot?
Absolutely. I mean, you know what's going on around you. You know who you are in competition with to you know, even make the team, right? I think coming even into spring training, we all would have said he's making the team, whether it's a long relief guy or the fifth starter. Now he's being thrust into the fifth starter spot because Alek Manoah has some shoulder issues. Absolutely. It's more now about being efficient and, you know, being better against left-handed hitters. And when you need to strike a guy out with an elevated fastball, you're capable of doing that. When you're, you know, wanting to throw get me over breaking stuff, you can do that. When you want to eliminate a right-handed hitter with a slider, you can do that, right? It's when you want to throw a change up early in the count to a lefty to get back into a count, you can do that. It's those things. And the more he is efficient here and can show this, the more confidence Pete Walker and John Snyder and the organization have around him out there, and understanding that he can get out of things if he gets into some bad things. Right. And that, I think, is the graduation part of it. And, you know, I've talked to him. I've seen him. Dude, he's a big guy. Like, big dudes can lean on the heater. And, you know, when you're a big dude and it changes eye level, I see if I can turn here. If I'm hitting and I'm looking at you and now I have to look up, but just because of his height and where he's releasing the baseball, it's very hard to tell what the top part of the strike zone is. And that's why you see it when he throws it to a good fastball hitter, they still can't hit it. They're either fouling it off, they're out in front, they're late on it, they're missing it. And I think that is sort of, you know, what makes him Bowden Francis, and why people that are around him talk the way they talk about him, including Pete Walker. He's a giant fan. Pete's been talking about Bowden Francis for a very long time.
What kind of guy is he? Because we don't know him that well. And you're right, Pete. I mean, Pete's name dropped him. Gosh, almost every interview we've done with Pete, going back to last year, when you talk about guys in the organization, he name dropped him. What type of guy is he? You know, he's got an interesting story. We talked about, you know, his cleats and all that, and his, you know, his son has painted the cleats and you know, the background story. He seems like a really decent guy. I'm just wondering sort of what type of person he is. I mean, is he quiet? Is there a quiet confidence? Is he kind of outgoing? How would you describe him?
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, it's like a gentle giant, mm-hmm. sort of kind of thing, until he gets on the mound and he's competing. Yeah, he's a quiet dude. Like, he's not going to stand up in the room and you know, voice his opinion. That's not where he's at in the organization or on the team. He's not going to do that. He's going to take the ball when they give him the ball, and he's going to go out there and compete at his ability. That's what I think the people that you listen to that have talked to him more than I've talked to him. It's random that I've talked mm-hmm. to him. I said, hi, sure. And how you doing? How's your pitching? And what are you working on? And he'll tell me short little answers, and it's quiet answers. I mean, you got to walk to him to listen and understand it. And, you know, he's competing. I like that part of it. Like, this competition in spring training is a good thing. Like, you can, regardless of what you're telling everybody, you can impress and make teams out of spring training. I mean, it's rare, but you can do that, right? And you, if even that part of it, you being the first guy being called up is a big deal. I was a part of that, where, you know, you impress enough that when somebody does get hurt, you're the first person they call up. You're not the third person they call up. Then that's a big deal. He's exactly what they need.
Mm-hmm.
I just Mitch White don't ooze confidence when it comes to, he may have confidence, but when you're watching him pitch, and if you're a Jays fan, and I even think in the organization, realistically, they would rather have Bowden Francis making starts and Mitch White coming out of pens or doing whatever else he's expected to do. So, yeah, look, they're fortunate to have a guy like that, and he's taking the bull, so to speak, and the horns and running with it. And throw strike one, be efficient, don't be afraid to pound the zone with your best pitch, which is his fastball. He does that, he'd be fine.
Yeah, that's really when you're talking about guys who are fifth starter or the long man, mostly the fifth starter, what you want a guy who's going to be efficient and isn't going to blow your bullpen up. That's really what you want, isn't it? Out of the fifth guy. You want him to be dependable. And he does strike you, again, from a distance, just from watching on TV. He strikes you as a type of guy that is pretty consistent in his approach. It doesn't mean there aren't going to be days where he's going to get hit. Everybody's going to get hit. But he exudes a sense. There's almost a sense that you can trust him. That's probably what I'm thinking from a distance. Again, I don't know the guy. But you just get the sense that you can trust a guy. I don't get that sense with Mitch White. I just don't get that sense.
For a big dude, he has great body awareness. He can self-correct on the mound. He can throw a secondary pitch for strike one. That means he's unpredictable. And he can throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count, which is what you have to do. You don't want to do it all the time, but occasionally you have to do that. And he feels confident enough because of those things, right, that he knows he has a good fastball. He's got a good catcher behind the plate most of the time. And Kirky and Jansen, who, you know, if he somewhat hits where they're aiming, then he's going to get a lot of dudes out. So, yeah, they're pretty fortunate that they don't feel like they're going to miss a beat because Alek Manoah is not making the start opening the season.
Last thing before we let you run. We mentioned yesterday Addison Barger or Relvis Martinez. They're both in the minor league camp. What are people saying about
best.
Pardon me?
That's for the best.
Yeah, no,
like they're not ready to be big leagues yet.
But I was going to say, what are you hearing from the organization? Because those are their two top position prospects. Alan Roden probably in there as well. He's still in the camp. But what are people saying about the spring those two dudes had?
I think they're confident. They're confident in the talent of both of those guys. I think with Relvis Martinez, what is he? What's he trying to be as a hitter? Mm-hmm. Do you want him to take a lot of pitches? Do you want him to be, you know, a 4.5 pitch guy per bat? I don't want that. I don't think he knows that. You see the at-bats that he did have in spring training. It was in between. He'd take a fastball down the middle. He's swinging a slider down away. Like, it's what is he? It looks like, you know, he's being told one thing. He's trying to go up and execute it, and maybe it's the wrong thing for him. So I think he's a little in between. Pick a spot, right? He's got tremendous power. Pick one of those things and attack that and let your talent take over. That's why I think him going to AAA is going to be beneficial for him. With Barger, look, he's a big swinger and he's a big dude. I'm just not sure, you know, with flexibility and being able to hit high octane velocity, even at his age, sitting over there with how he's going to have to sit over there and the way they want to use him, and him to be, you know, efficient enough and have quality at bats enough for him to be warranted on the roster right now. I just don't think that's the case. So, you know, go down there and figure out who you are as a hitter. You know, can you attack and guess early in counts to get a breaking ball where you could backspin it, stay through it enough and hit a home run to left center? That's what they want to see from him. He's a home run guy. Go down there and hit a bunch of homers. Like, this is, you know, we get back to that Schneider thing where he had the bent upper half because where you're drafted, nobody knows who you are. You got to be noticed. How do I get noticed? I pull the ball in the air because I have power. How do you do that? He made an adjustment that way. Barger, Martinez, they're no different. Martinez is because of where he's at in the prospect thing. He's got a little bit more lenience when it comes to that, but you got to go down there and impress, and I think they're going to get every opportunity to do that. Are you going to see him this year? I don't think so. I don't think that's what's best for the team. If you do see him, probably the season's not going the way the Blue Jays want it to go. But that has nothing to do with any talent that they have. It's just experience. It's learning who you are. It's learning how to attack at bats. It's learning how to go through a long season against some really good pitching to be the best you can possibly be. And them going down, and even the weather, Jeff, in Buffalo early in the season, you got to figure out ways to work around that and maneuver through it. I've done it. It sucks. It's the worst thing ever. Like, you got to wear thicker batting gloves. It's just little things like that to figure out who you are. You would change your lower half because of the weather. It's things they have to work through, and because they have a lot of talent, they'll figure it out. It's good for them.
Mr. Barker, we're going to let you scoot, man. As always, terrific stuff.
Absolutely. Appreciate you.
You look spectacular. The view there is spectacular.
Hot. It's hot today.
Yeah, like, okay, you can run.
Thank goodness I'm in the shade.
Yeah, hot. That's all we need to know. Thanks, Bart.
I'm squinting.
You're the best, man.
It's so sunny, I'm squinting. I can't see you, Jeff. Wow.
Yeah. See you later, man. Kevin Barker in Florida. He'll be down there next week as well. I think we should bring a jacket for Blair and Barker jacket. I think we should have a jacket on the show. And every day we'll give the jacket to whoever performs best in the show. That may be an idea. A big trade made in the major leagues last night. The San Diego Padres, who, I mean, God love AJ Preller, man. I mean he does love him some trades. The San Diego Padres acquiring Dylan Cease last night from the Chicago White Sox for three minor leaguers, including one of whom, Drew Thorpe, the Padres got from the New York Yankees in the Juan Soto deal. It is it's a big deal for baseball. Dylan Cease and Blake Snell. Snell's a free agent. Jordan Montgomery's a free agent. But Snell, Cease, and Montgomery were kind of the three pitchers who were quote-unquote on the market. It's a big trade. It's an interesting trade. And David Sampson is host of Nothing Personal, the podcast. He is the former president of the Miami Marlins. He's been involved in a lot of these trades. I want to ask him what the hell the San Diego Padres are up to, though, because it certainly seems as if they're sending out different messages. We also want to talk about Gerrit Cole's injury. And we're going to... Well, let's wait. We're going to call BS on how the New York Yankees have handled this whole situation. We'll do that next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
A reminder that tomorrow, being Friday, we will go to the back leg line, 416-413-3959. So any questions or comments you have for Kevin Barker, who is down in Dunedin, please leave us a voice note, name and location. Obviously, makes it a little easier. And we'll put together the best of the calls slash questions and ask them of Mr. Barker. Made this point just before the break that, or mentioned just before the break, the San Diego Padres and Chicago White Sox making a trade yesterday. Dylan Cease going to the Padres for prospects. Steven Wilson, Drew Thorpe, who came to San Diego from the Yankees in the Juan Soto deal. Jairo Iriarte and outfielder Samuel Zavala. So there were really, I would say there were three pitchers. There was Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery are both free agents. And Dylan Cease, who just about everybody on the planet expected to be traded at some point. Those were kind of, there were three, I guess I would call them difference-making pitchers who were quote-unquote on the market. Now there's two. Both of them are free agents. Both of them are Scott Boras clients. I want to bring in our next guest, David Sampson. He's host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. He's a former president of the Miami Marlins. David, thank you for joining us. Here's what I got to ask you. As someone who has been part of deals made, part of deals that have fallen through, given general managers marching orders, all that good stuff, it seems to me as if AJ Preller has decided to course correct without being on a course. is that kind of where we should be with this deal, or is this just AJ Preller bored and wanting to make something happen?
You can't course correct if you're not on a course, but on the other hand, he is on a course, so you have that slightly wrong. The course is build, 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 overspend, overspend, underperform, tank down. Then build, 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 overspend, underperform, lose money, then get rid of the players. One of these days, he's got to win a ring or else all this is craziness is for naught. The Dylan Cease deal, though, is not an example of that. If he had signed Blake Snell to an outrageous contract or Montgomery or any of the free agents, that would have been a better example of more further irresponsibility. I am good with trading prospects for Dylan Cease. He's $8 million this year. That's it. That's paid like a number seven starter, and he could be a number three. So I think that's a deal worth doing.
What are the San Diego Padres in your mind?
What happened or where are they?
What are they? What are the San Diego Padres in your mind? A wild card contender?
No, they're an irresponsible team. I feel terribly for the fans. Although, it's interesting, the fans love it because they go to the games. It's a great area. I was just in San Diego for a charity event, and I love going around Petco Park, and I think it's terrific. But I just think AJ Preller's not done a great job, and people in the industry agree pretty unanimously in that it's difficult. And I did this too, Jeff. You watched me do it in Florida where it's up, down, up, down. And in hindsight, it's just not a smart way to go.
How do you prevent that then? How do you prevent that from happening? Do you have to have the courage of your convictions, or I don't know, maybe having the courage of your convictions is exactly the reason there's a lot of up and down and up and down.
Yeah, there's two ways. One, you could be like Tampa, where you have a payroll that is pretty steady, and it forces you to trade players a year too early, which is the smartest time to trade them. It forces you to not make mistakes in free agency because you don't sign any of the big free agents. That's one way to do it. Then you could do it the way I did it, which is once in a while sign the big free agents, and then sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Not worry about your farm system and not believe that you need people from your farm impacting your team every year. That's what a real pipeline is, not being ranked first or ranked 20th. People in baseball don't care about the farm system rankings. It never comes up, Jeff, not once. Mm-hmm. What they care about is there an impactful part of your team that you can bring on every season? That's how we would judge our development system.
I want to shift focus a little bit to Gerrit Cole, who is out for 1 to 2 months, according to reports, after undergoing an MRI in his elbow. I love that you made this point in social media about sort of how the Yankees are quote unquote handling the flow of information. And I always kind of laugh at this because as a member of the media, you want to know all the details as soon as possible. It used to be you wanted to know all the accurate details as soon as possible. Now a 50% accuracy rate is, I mean, it gets you a Pulitzer Prize.
Pretty good.
It's really good. So you want to know as much information as possible. But at the same time, David, I don't know. Like, there's nothing that obligates a team to tell you that, right? I mean, I believe isn't there HIPAA regulations? There's nothing that obligates a team to hold a news conference and say Gerrit Cole's out for 2 months, guys.
Absolutely not. And frankly, we lied to you guys every day because we pretend that it was for competitive reasons. And sometimes you hide behind HIPAA, mm-hmm. but sometimes we just did it for sport. And one of the reasons why is we would say we don't want the other teams to know. It's like when you would meet the manager pregame and the manager would always have a piece of paper. I don't know if you ever noticed this, always with every pitcher and when they last pitched and how many pitches they pitched in each of their last four appearances. And we would decide before the game who's available, who's not. Mm-hmm. And we would keep it as like a state secret, like we've got the codes to the nuclear launch codes or something, because we didn't want the other team to know who to prepare for. And so we always made sure the manager took that piece of paper away from his desk when the media would come in for the pregame media avail. But one of the things that you have to know about what the Yankees do is I think they're misleading themselves. It's not up to them to lead or mislead the media. We all have to do our own work to get the information. But just don't lie with something that's not credible. Don't say we don't have MRI results back yet. You do, because you get them back immediately. There's no waiting. And mm-hmm. that always made me crazy when teams would say that, because it's just not accurate. And two, if there's information out there about a player that's not true, I want to leak something that will change the information, because I don't want Boris or the White Sox or anyone to think that I'm desperate. So if the reports are that Cole's missing 1 to 2 months, that means that that's the minimum he's missing, because the Yankees want that report out there. Because, hey, we're not panicking. We don't mm-hmm. need to sign Snell. We don't need to trade for Cease. We'll get through 1 or 2 months. If word is out they're missing the year, then all of a sudden people think that their desperation level increases. And that's what we're seeing now today with possible reports that he could miss a year and the Yankees, though, still wouldn't sign Snell at his asking price.
David, I'm interested in his particular situation. He has an opt-out clause, or he has an option he can exercise this year. He can go to free agency, or he can exercise an option and make a ton of money that basically carries him through, I think, to at least 35 or 36 or 37. I presume he's going to get, as part of this process, I'm sure he's going to be getting second and third opinions. When everybody sits down and discusses, they know what's happening to him, this is the possible path forward. Is it the team, the agent, the player? Is it, do the player and agent have to make a decision first? Like, how does that process work? Because this is, you know, it's not going to be the end of his career, but there is a, there's a financial aspect to this deal for both the Yankees and for Gerrit Cole.
So you have to get buy-in from the player. And so when you get an MRI back and there is a partial tear where it's not a definite Tommy John, very often pitchers want to try to get through it the way Tanaka did. It doesn't happen often where you get an injection, you get cortisone, you just let it rest, bring the inflammation down, then you ramp up. My issue always was, does that hurt us next season? So the math is that if you are at the beginning of a season the way we are now in March, if he needs some sort of surgery and it's going to be a 6 to 10 month recovery, I want to do it now so he can have a normal off season and then a normal spring training and then be back for next year. If it's Tommy John, I want it now so he will be back in theory for sure at the All-Star break of next season. Because so often you try to get yourself better without surgery and it just doesn't work. But we tell the player that the player has to decide. We cannot make a player get surgery. We can suggest it, but we can't make them. And the other thing, Jeff, is they get under the CBA a second opinion that comes from a union-approved doctor.
Okay.
So they get to go get a second opinion. That's on the house. Then if they're still not sure, they can go get a third opinion. And you're seeing a lot of that with Gerrit Cole. And now he's going to L.A., and my only message to you is no one flies to see the doctor in L.A. if there's not a problem.
Yeah.
You don't go to be told that, hey, everything's good, you're good here. It's to confirm the news that you already know and to discuss in person any treatment options. But the Yankees are saying he wants to examine him. That's all fine and dandy. That's what we say. But the truth is you get it from the scans.
This brings up an interesting point. It's something I thought about when Shohei Ohtani was a free agent, and we found out that the doctor who operated on him was the Dodgers team physician. I mean, he operates on a ton of guys. Dr. Elatrache, I think is how you pronounce his name. He operates on a lot of guys, and I've always kind of thought about this. Isn't there kind of a conflict here when you got a guy who was the Dodgers team doctor operating in a guy? Like, I mean, one of the things I remember talking to some guys about the Ohtani's medicals, and they said, well, the Dodgers doctor, he's actually seen the thing. He knows better than anybody what's going on. Like, why isn't that more of an issue?
Did you go on DavidSamsonPodcast.com and ask me this exact question?
No. Today? No, I didn't, but
because
I've thought about it.
I covered that exact question on Nothing Personal today in the So You Want to Talk to Samson segment because someone asked it, and here's my answer. Although you can go listen to Nothing Personal, but
sure,
we're on your show. I want to give it to you. Doctors are really good. We never went to our team doctor and said, hey, Dr. Kaplan, when that Phillies guy comes in, operate on the wrong knee. We don't do that.
Make an extra incision. Yeah.
Exactly. As competitive as I was, and as much as I hated other teams, even I wouldn't do that. And even if I asked, doctors wouldn't. And the other thing is, there's a hand specialist in New York. He's the Mets doctor. Players from every division go see him. Same with Elatrage over in L.A. Everyone goes to see him. Back in the day when Andrews was doing Tommy John's as well. Doctors do not care if you're a Philly or a Marlin or a Yankee or a Blue Jay. They take care of every player. And even when it's your team doctor, think about it when you're at home in Toronto. If I'm visiting you as a Marlin and my player gets hurt, they're being seen by your team doctor. And
right.
I have no issue that they're getting the best care possible.
Okay, last question before I let you run. I haven't seen the numbers. There seem to be a lot of pitching injuries this year. People are saying there's a lot of pitching injuries in spring training. I think it was Dr. Keith Meister, the Rangers team doctor, did an article with Ken Rosenthal, I think it was, but he was talking about he thinks that there are some things teams are doing with their pitching in spring training that's contributing to this. Has Major League Baseball ever thought about putting together some sort of blue ribbon committee to look at pitching injuries? You know, And
every year for 20 years, Jeff, because all we do, it started with Selig and now it's Manfred. All we do every year is get a slide of how much money we're wasting on right. injured pitchers and then players who stink that we sign to bad deals. So we've been trying to figure out pitcher injuries forever. You can blame it on velocity. You can blame it on not enough pitching. Jack McKeon used to say, we got to throw these guys way more. We're babying them, and that's why they get hurt. But there's other people who believe we're throwing them too much velocity, and all we crave is velocity, so we're just begging for pitchers to get injured. And the reason why baseball tells us this is they say, don't sign guys to long-term deals. It's never going to work. And Gerrit Cole's a great example. That's not a good deal right now. 4 years of greatness, but there's 5 years left after he opts in.
So it's less what can we do to keep our guys healthy and more don't sign these guys to long-term contracts because they're going to get hurt.
Yes, and we've tried to figure out what can we do better? What can we do for training, for nutrition? What is it that we're doing wrong? But it's been going on for decades, so there is nothing new. Recency bias is an amazing thing, Jeff. It may feel like there's more injured pitchers for this year's opening day. Go do a quick Google for the number of starters who weren't available last opening day. It'll surprise you that it's pretty consistent, and it's bad.
He is host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. David, thank you so much for joining us today. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Take care. There you go. I remember we used to always talk about the team physicians. Dr. Frank Jobe was part owner at one point was part owner, I believe, of the Boston Red Sox as well. And I always used to kind of shake my head. I didn't want to call any, cast any aspersions in team doctors. I just kind of thought with all the specialists on the planet, the idea that you would go and see somebody else who was employed by another team just kind of struck me as odd. But there you go. And terrific insight from David Sampson on that Dylan Cease deal. And, yeah, I mean, if you're a Padres fan, A.J. Preller traded Juan Soto. A.J. Preller has let an entire free agent pitching staff go. Snell, Hader, Lugo, Waka, Nick Martinez. He let all of them leave as free agents. Then he goes out and trades for a starting pitcher. I mean, you can see where, as David Sampson says, where Padres fans are, it's great that your team isn't doing a thorough rebuild. I suppose I don't think too many fans sign on for rebuilds. They'd much rather see a team compete. But my goodness, you look at what the Padres are doing, and even with the fact that adding Dylan Cease gives them a pretty good rotation, Darvish, Musgrove, King, and Cease, you just kind of wonder what the thought process is for A.J. Preller. And let's be clear, the Padres are chasing the Diamondbacks who are chasing the Dodgers. It's not as if the Padres are, as decent as their lineup is, it's not as if the Padres are, I think, at any point soon going to be winning the National League West. But it was fascinating because Dylan Cease, all we heard were Yankees. We heard Texas Rangers. Then we started to hear that there's a third team involved in it. And the third team appeared to be the San Diego Padres, who pulled off the deal last night. And now Blake Snell, Jordan Montgomery, they're still on the market. It's almost as if it's a staring contest between the Yankees and Scott Boras now, because you've got a Scott Boras client in Gerrit Cole who is awaiting final results on an injury that could conceivably end his year. And you got the two big free agents out there who are also Scott Boras clients. The road always goes through Scott Boras's office. It doesn't matter what time of year it is. The road always seems to go through Scott Boras's office. That's it for me. A reminder, for listening to us on podcast, please leave a rating and review. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.